You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Shouldn't you be at home?
It's a lovely chip! Oh, it's a brilliant goal from Lord Poheedon!
Still, it's not away. Southgate shot. Milosevic scores.
DPR could do with a bit of magic from him. Maybe this is it. It is! Andy Sinton from nothing.
Brian Roy has headed Forest into the lead.
Whelan. Oh, what a goal from Noel Whelan.
No power on it whatsoever. But Taibbi has made a horrendous error.
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, and it hasn't.
No.
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? I'm Chris Skoll. Joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And we have no Michael Marden this week. And indeed, we have no John Hare either. John Hare was meant to be out this morning, but instead, Michael decided to blow up his Commodore 64 that he edits on over the weekend, put in too many dodgy tapes, and so everything went to pot. No John Hare this week.
The worst thing was he got to the final level of Treasure Land Dizzy as well. But he was desperately gutted.
So Josh and I decided, well, we're just going to put out a little special correspondence episode to keep you ticking over until next week when John Hare and Michael can make a triumphant return. Just talking about Commodore 64, it just reminded me that my Commodore 64 used to crash all the time as you were loading games. Yeah, awful. Hardly ever worked.
What is your favourite? We've never really discussed the Commodore 64. Were you a Commodore 64 over Spectrum man?
I didn't really have the choice. I got a Commodore 64 for Christmas once, but I had about three games, and I could only ever get one of them to work.
Do you know, this is a computer game story, a football story, sorry. So we went to Dixon's in Newton Abbot just before Christmas in about, I don't know what year, maybe it was 1990 or 91, just when I got into football, right? And they had like a football game playing on a screen called International Soccer. And there and then I said, that is what I want for Christmas.
Wow.
But it wasn't just the Commodore 64. It was the Commodore 64 console version. So it didn't even have the typing or anything. It was just cartridges. And you couldn't get any games for it because there was only about four games there. So it was complete. I had that and I had Flimbo's Quest. And I had a thing called Feedin' Freddy's Big Top Oh Fun that was a game based where you did different circus skills.
I had on my Commodore 64 Mike Reed's Pop Quiz.
And well, Mike Reed the DJ, not Frank Butcher.
Well, that's the thing. I was like, this guy looks nothing like Mike Reed, thinking it was Frank Butcher. Only like years later did I realise there was an old Radio 1 DJ called Mike Reed, which made way more sense when I figured it out.
Also, I love the idea that you'd have purchased a computer game purely on the fact that it was endorsed by Frank Butcher.
I mean,
you already had Pam St. Clement's Fruit Machine, didn't you? That was the other one.
And June Brown's Soccer Special. Do send in your fictional EastEnders Commodore 64 video games. Hello at quicklykevin.com.
And then Michael will check the inbox and go, what the hell were you two talking about? What I love is this, like, teacher away is so we can talk about EastEnders rather than football. We've never wanted to talk about football in the first place.
Finally.
What was your favourite ever episode of EastEnders from the 90s, Scott?
Oh, I was just thinking of the one where Frank Butcher came in with the bow tie that spun. Yeah. And he was laying it on with Pat, wasn't he? That was what that was about.
Yeah, he was having an affair with Pat because she was going out. Why have we never mentioned this before? She was going out with someone called Roy Evans.
Oh my. Do you know what? I've always thought that What a strange, like, when they decide a character's name, doesn't someone put their hand up and go, Liverpool's manager's Roy Evans? That was the same time. It's too weird.
But they'd originally changed it. There's a couple of scenes they'd filmed where it's called Gerard Houllier.
Do you remember when the character of Roy Evans was played by two actors simultaneously? That's a joke. That's a
Roy. Oh, sorry, sorry.
Because that's the Gerard Houllier Roy Evans joke.
No, that was. Do you know why that struck as real to me? Because obviously in Neighbours, there was a brief period. Do you remember Cheryl Stark, who was married to? Did you watch Neighbours?
Yes.
Yeah. So Cheryl Stark, who was married to Lou, she for about 8 weeks she was just played by a different actress, and who had blonde hair rather than red and a different face, but they just didn't address it, and then she just changed back, like in a UK sitcom. They'd get rid of the character. They'd write the character out for 8 weeks. But they were just like, yeah, Cheryl looks different for 8 weeks. It completely ruined it for me.
Is it Sam Mitchell, Daniela Westbrook?
Yeah, she changed, didn't she?
I mean, I always find it's astonishing, really. I mean, the character is just, it's finished. You can't turn up a new character and everyone reacts like it's the old one.
That's the worst bit. When the new actor turns up as Sam Mitchell, everyone has to keep going, Sam! So that it's clear to the audience.
It just doesn't work, does it?
No. Do you know what, Chris? We should just record ourselves for us. So what is the point of us interviewing footballers? This is much better.
Do you know what I watched the other day? The scene where Harold Bishop goes missing.
Oh, I've not watched that in years. Is it good?
It's definitely not what I remember.
No?
You just kind of wander. Yeah, he just kind of wanders off the rocks, disappears. Like, it looks really rubbish, like really cheaply done. But I remember thinking it was epic.
Well, I remember a Madge, like, holding his glass. Don't his glasses get found?
Wash up on the shore.
They wash up on the shore, so I remember Madge crying with his glasses. My favourite death scene in Neighbours is when Helen Daniels dies.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And she dies being how... But they're watching. She's sat round with Button, her granddaughter, what's she called, Hannah. But she was called Button. And, like, Philip and Debbie and people, and then they're watching Scott and Charlene's wedding on a home video of it, and then she kind of drifts off and dies watching that, which is a nice poetic kind of way to end it, right? But because obviously they've only got Scott and Charlene's wedding shot as it was shot for the Neighbours, like they're watching this home video and it's got like six different camera angles and it's got like swooping shots and it's got like close-ups of Charlene. You're like, surely there was a way around that.
Maybe that's Helen Daniels started thinking about that, and that's what finished her off.
Blew her mind.
She did it on her death certificate. It says blown mind.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Right, we should say why we're here. So we wanted to use this opportunity to do some correspondence, because we've had so much good correspondence from you guys, that we just thought we'd do some. Chris, we've had a lot of name games. Do you want them?
Love it. Love the name game so much.
You love the name game, right? Yeah. So Michael's not here to adjudicate. What I love now, right, is because I'm getting quite a lot of these name games in. You know, like in chess, there's like known starts and stuff. Like there's classic kind of, in chess there'll be like, positions that repeat themselves because players will do like, you know, whatever the Russian opening or whatever it would be. There's like patterns of names that are like classic three or four long chains that everyone's doing.
You can say John Collins, Collins John. I mean, yeah, that's a staple.
There's bigger ones than that, but should we start with this? This is a good one, but it's a classic one which really relies on always being first names. Okay, so this is a 10, and a 10 these days is kind of par for what we're receiving. This is from Neil Fay. Stern John, John Charles, Charlie Daniels, Daniel James, James Colin, Collins John, John Collins, Colin Lee, Lee Clark, Clark Carlisle.
Ooh.
I mean, there's nothing you can quibble with there,
no.
Is there?
Was there Charles Charlie? I mean, if you really...
There was a Charles Charlie, but I think you can allow that.
Yeah. A court of law, they'd have to allow that.
Are you going to allow this, though? This person, Liam Olivier. Oliver, sorry, has gone with his subject of his email is name change, smashed it, 15.
Whoa.
He says, brace yourselves. Okay. Idan Tal. Do you know who that is?
No.
No. Tal Ben Haim. Ben Roberts. I'm going to have to stop him there. You can't go Tal.
You've got to be going Haim. You've got to be starting with Haim.
Yeah. You've got to be going Tal Ben Haim Naim at best as a push. So I think we're just banning that one there. I do apologise, Liam Olivier, but you can't go Tal Ben Haim Ben Roberts. That is an unbelievable move. This one's dodgy footballer's name link from Glavin Blackwell. Lucien Laurent, who he's put in brackets, scored first ever World Cup goal. Laurent Robert, Roberto Di Matteo, Matteo Darmian, Damien Mathieu, Matt Ritchie, Richie Morgan, Morgan Bryan, don't know who that is, Brian Dean, Dean Oliver, Oliver Floron, Floron Andre, Andre Mark, Mark Howard, Howard Stern.
Howard Stern.
Stern. Howard Stern. And then obviously Stern, John, John Collins, Collins, John, John Terry, Thierry Henry. That is an absolutely classic sequence. And then Henri Savant, whoever that is. It's quite a good one, but I think Howard Stern in the middle.
Yeah, you lost me there.
So we're still a perfect 10 as the House Martins sang. Not the House Martins. His
Beautiful South.
Band. Oh, Chain of 12 from Dominic Field.
Oh, go on.
Fanidi George. George Graham. Graham Stewart. Stuart O'Keefe. Keith Eddie. Eddie Pope. Pope John Paul. Paul Stewart.
It's my favourite thing about these name games.
Next to Pope John Paul II, in brackets, famously a goalkeeper.
He was famously a
goalkeeper.
I think, Joe, what? We're going to have to allow this.
We're going to have to allow it. So, Pope John Paul, Paul Stewart, Stuart Dallas, Dallas J, J. Emmanuel Thomas, Thomas Finney. And then he's put Finney D. George. And then it loops around again. Perfect circle.
It goes on forever.
It goes on forever. That is a great, great... Also, and can you do this if you're submitting them? So 12 is now the benchmark. Dominic Field has put in brackets who, like, their teams and who they are, which is very helpful for us because I didn't know who Stuart O'Keefe was for a start. Do you want to hear that one more time? Because it is glorious.
Yeah.
Fanidi George. George Graham. Graham Stewart. Stuart O'Keefe. Keith Eddie. Which is funny in itself. We overlook that. That's a funny link. Eddie Pope. Pope John Paul II. Paul Stewart. Stuart Dallas. Dallas J. J. Emmanuel Thomas. Thomas Finney. Finney de George.
George Graham, and off we go. Again.
George Graham, and off we go.
Is it controversial, Pope John Paul II? Shouldn't he be using second there instead of Paul?
Oh, I think that's... I mean, Pope John... That would be brutal.
I'm just trying to put my head inside Michael's. What would he say?
Yeah, I mean... I mean
we'll have to wait to find out.
Yeah. The nines and tens, I'm sorry. So it's 12s or above we're looking for now. And we will be needing the people to... could you put what they do? Who they play, what they do? Footballers, why they... Footballers, because some of them we haven't heard of. Okay, do you want to hear... do you remember when we talked about Tony Curry?
No, I never forget it.
Right. This is from someone called John Paul Davis, in fact. So might be Pope John Paul.
Any relation?
Right. Hi, I was listening to the When Saturday Comes episode the other day when you were discussing Sheffield United in England legend, Tony Curry. A few years ago, he moved onto my parents' street in Worksop. We only knew who he was because he had a sponsored van with his name on the side. He regularly walks his dogs on the field behind my parents' house. And one day, he accidentally threw the dog balls into my parents' garden. We know this because he put a note through their door asking for the balls back. Fair enough. But in a twist worthy of an episode of Alan Partridge, he wrote the note on a postcard featuring his own career stats. See below the photographic proof. Do you know what, Skull? I'm going to just send it to you now.
So oh, that's lovely.
The fun. That is what he's done the note on.
So Tony Curry is made... created his own kind of autograph cards, and on those autograph cards he's put his league career statistics as well as the amount of caps he got for England under 23s, England, and as an England youth.
So he's made that himself, which is totally fair enough, because obviously Tony Curry's a famous person, but then he's obviously thrown some balls into someone's back garden and then he's thought, I'll write it on that. I've sent you the back of the card. He's put many thanks and then his house number. We won't say that. Isn't that bizarre?
I know. So Tony Curry's
written that.
So he's written on the back, there are two rugby balls in your back garden. I must be getting old. Could you save them for me? I will pick them up when you come in.
Many thanks.
Number 14. I mean, would you, if you got that card from Tony Curry, someone written on that Tony Curry card, would you necessarily be expecting that Tony Curry would actually turn up?
You'd presume that someone had got a Tony Curry, got a Tony Curry based postcard. You wouldn't be expecting that Tony Curry himself was using that as his calling card whenever he lost something. Whenever I lose a ball, what I like to do is just let them know it's me, and also let them know that I played 18 games for Watford, scored 9 goals. That's one goal every 2 games. Can't beat that.
And scored a single goal for Torquay.
Scored a single goal for Torquay United. He spent most of his career at Sheffield United, and it doesn't mention when Saturday comes on it.
I've got another bit of a gossip. Do you remember we previously talked about Tony Coton a fair bit in this series, but also in the Premier Passions documentary. So there I am watching the new series of Sunderland Till I Die, and Sunderland's head of recruitment, Mr. Tony Coton.
Oh, is he?
He's still there. And it plays a fairly major role in the new series of Sunderland Till I Die.
And what's he like?
You don't really see much personality, to be fair. His probably most involved scenes are the scenes in which they sign Will Grigg. Grigg or Will Griggs?
I have literally no idea.
Well, because I'm mostly known from the song Will Griggs on Fire. But is that Will Griggs?
Well, you can't tell from that.
No,
you
can't. But anyway. If you're a fan of Tony Coton and you're looking for some Tony Coton content, new series of Sunderland Till I Die is on Netflix.
Do you reckon that's bringing many people to Sunderland Till I Die?
Might see a bit of an uplift in viewers there.
Stuart Boone has emailed in. Great show. I'm now staring to re-listen to the old ones. After Josh's bashing of 1966, I thought I'd do the same about Euro 96. How are you feeling about that, Skull?
Okay, go on. I'll hear this one out.
I don't think we were good at all, apart from the Holland game and Gazza's brilliance against Scotland. Switzerland, Scotland, Spain, and most of the Germany game, we are poor. Anderson's easy chance, he also misses. Great song, and Pierce had his passion back. Apart from these, we weren't great. From Stuart in Bluntisham.
I can understand why someone may have that revisionism of history, that opinion. I don't know.
My issue with that, if I may, Skull.
Yeah.
Is I think it is a complete misunderstanding of why people love Euro 96. And I am not into it. I don't think you love a major tournament because your team has played well. I think the thrill of your team getting to the semi-finals of a major tournament is... And what that does to the country and what that does to your experience of watching it and how that kind of fits into like the kind of how rarely that happens to you in your life. You couldn't give a shit if Spain should have beaten us. I don't think that's what it's about.
Yeah.
I don't think about other tournaments where teams were good and love that as much as Euro 96. I just love it because we did well, right?
Yeah, it's about being carried along on that national emotive wave, isn't it? It's about being belonging to a crowd of people who all want the same thing. That's ultimately what all of football is about, isn't it? Not necessarily just the performances.
Would you take England being total shit at Euro 2021 or but winning it?
That is a great question. And I think the answer has to be yes.
Yeah, you of just, course.
And that's why I maintain Big Sam should still be manager. I mean, we saw what he was going to do, the potential in that single game he had.
Yeah, did we? Yeah, did he win his game?
I think it was like a grimy 1-0 win over someone, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got 100%. How many England managers have a 100% record?
Well, exactly. I walked past him at Stockport Station a couple of months ago, and I should have stopped him and asked him to do the podcast. I regret it.
I wonder how he's getting on with lockdown. I bet he loves it.
Yeah, he'll have a huge house. He hasn't got a job anyway.
Well, you say he's got a huge house. Did you remember when he got sacked as England manager, the Sky cameras went outside his house when like a big kind of national scandal blows up. Big Sam came out of his house and it came up, like he lives in Bolton. And yeah. His house looks pretty ordinary. From the outside, it just looked like a bungalow.
Really?
Yeah, it looked like a normal street. Unless it was around his mum's or something like that. But I can't imagine, I would have thought Big Sam had almost a castle. It certainly wasn't that. Like, I mean, there's a man who lives in a fort, if ever I saw one.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you reckon he's a good neighbour?
Would you think if he knocked balls over his house, over your garden, he'd come around with a signed card?
Yeah, and it would say, on the career stats, it would say England, one game, one win.
It'd just have win rate, 100%.
Right, you'll like this one. You'll like this one, Chris.
Yeah.
This is from James Hodges. Hello, gents. Just listened to the Ben Clark 1989-90 Man United Warts and All expose. I was laughing at the bit about the Victorian moustache on the Newton Heath shirt in the United Museum when I remembered their weird team photo from the 92-93 season. Clearly, United's commercial manager was a big fan of fake Victorian moustaches, as he was of massive watch clocks. I'm going to send this to you now, Skull. I remembered this, but you know those things you don't remember and then you see it, you're like, oh yeah.
Oh yes.
So describe it.
So it's what year is this? I'd say this is...
92-93.
92-93, and it's Manchester United in their Newton Heath-inspired away kit, and it's a publicity shot, and all the players are dressed up, like, have facial hair from the kind of 1900s.
They've all been given Victorian moustaches.
Victorian moustaches.
Except about five of them.
Brian McClare's in one. Steve Bruce is actually not wearing a moustache, but Ryan Giggs has had his hair looked like it's gelled, especially
in a kind of... Fergie. Like, imagine suggesting to Alex Ferguson, we thought it'd be a bit of fun if you could dress up as a Victorian.
Yeah, Alex Ferguson looks like a kind of American oil speculator there.
He does.
He really looks like he'd does. Come and try and buy your property at a bargain basement price and then mine for oil or drill for oil.
He looks like someone who, I mean, this is too niche, but if you were to watch a Sherlock Holmes ITV2 one, he'd be someone that would be done for the crime and it would turn out he was American all along. Or he looks like a horse racing trainer. He looks like one of the people I imagine he then ended up caught in problems with from Gibraltar.
Cantona's got a centre parting, a great a moustache with a real flair to it, kind of like those like proper Germans at Oktoberfest style.
Yeah. Is it Brian Robson who's also dressed in a kind of...
I can't tell who that is. Although Peter Schmeichel was wearing a flat cap, like a Peaky Blinders style flat cap.
It's an amazing photo. We'll put it on our Instagram and our Twitter. Thank you very much for it. I find that... Imagine suggesting that now. It just... But I think it just shows, basically, that was 92-93. It shows how even the year after just winning the league for the first time, or was that not, he hadn't even won the league by that point, I don't think. So Alex Ferguson, basically, he hadn't amassed his power base. It's a bit like him doing that documentary. He's still having to jump through these Manchester United commercial hoops.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? People were just more up for it, I think. I think the idea of fame in football and being asked to do things like this was so new that people just jumped at the chance when we were offered it. It was all so funny and unique. Whereas now everyone's so cynical.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, I'm not going to lie to you, Chris. 90s football was better than now.
except for that brief moment when Big Sam was England manager.
Except the brief moment when Big Sam was England manager, which, of course, is the greatest that football has got. We will be back next Monday with the John Hare episode. This is the man behind Sensible Soccer. We're all very excited to meet him. There was a lot of Commodore 64 chat, obviously, like this episode. So if you enjoyed that chat at the top, bit less EastEnders. But we really feel like we've scratched that itch. Thank you for listening. Thank you for continuing to subscribe and listen. We are sorry it's a shorter episode this week. We are sorry there has been no Michael. But we will be back as a 3 and a 4 with John Hare next Monday. Chris?
Until then, Robbie Slater.
See you later.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.